Blog Talk Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in on this lovely sunny Friday morning here in St. Louis. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Again, thank you for hanging out with me, TGIF people. The weekend is upon us. And of course, as always, we've got a ton of stuff to get to today. As you can guess, a lot of it has to do with last night's Republican debate. The absence of Donald Trump, Fox News, Megyn Kelly. We'll talk about it all. And special treat today, we will talk about it all with my very special guest, Martin Baker. Martin is an amazing guy. Martin was a former congressional candidate here in Missouri. He does some political consulting work now, and former Navy SEAL. So, of course, we thank him for his service to our nation. And he's going to give us some insights into all things Iowa caucus, what he thinks might happen on Monday when the first votes are cast for the 2016 presidential election. So we've got that, and we've got, like I said, a ton of stuff to get into today. I've got new polling numbers, so let's get into it. Let's go. Like I said, of course, most of the talk today, this morning, is, of course, centered around last night's GOP debate. And just a few observations myself. Like I have said previously on previous shows, I'm not publicly endorsing anyone as yet. I have my favorites, but I'm just not comfortable endorsing anyone publicly as yet. So when I say something, I'm not supporting Donald Trump, or I'm not supporting Ted Cruz. I'm not supporting anyone publicly as yet. And my first impression when I watched the debate last night was that there was a lot of gotcha going on, even without Donald Trump there. It just seemed like that there was a lot of gotcha aimed at Ted Cruz. And as far as people having good nights, bad nights, the one person I thought that had a fantastic night was Marco Rubio. He was sharp. He was articulate. He told it like it is. He had a good night. I think that Chris Christie had a good night. In fact, I think that Chris Christie kind of had one of the lines of the night when the subject of Hillary Clinton's email scandal briefly came up. And I think that I don't know what – I'm not sure what number debate we're into now. If it's like six or seven, I'm not sure. With the first votes being cast on Monday in Iowa, I don't know that – and this was basically – this debate basically was kind of a closing argument debate. It was a chance to give all the candidates a chance to say, vote for me and here's why. And that's fine. But – I think at this point, they whittled it down from 2012 to about 10 debates this election cycle. And it's almost, I think, even that's almost getting to a point where it's a little much. Like I said, the first votes will be cast on Monday in the Iowa caucus. Iowa is the first in the nation, of course, to cast their votes. And so that was my first impression, was that there was a little bit of gotcha going on, whether or not that was by design or it just kind of happened that way. And most of the gotcha I felt was being thrown towards Ted Cruz. And, you know, I think that we all, I think it's becoming clearer and clearer what, whether it's the Fox News commentators and moderators themselves, or they're getting marching orders from higher up, who knows? But it's becoming a little bit more clear what Fox News as a whole, Fox News as an entity, it's becoming a little bit more clear just exactly how they feel about Ted Cruz. I think we've all had suspicions from the get-go that they were kind of falling in for the establishment. They were, it seemed that they were behind Marco Rubio, that they were certainly behind Jeb Bush. And so maybe the gotcha part is, maybe it's a little expected, but so that was my first observation. Secondly, excuse me, there's been a lot of talk this week about, well, first about the fact that, of course, Donald Trump did not participate in this debate. He held a fundraiser at Drake University in Iowa for veterans, and CNN broadcast that live last night, and I believe the final tally was that Donald Trump raised about $6 million for veterans last night. So I don't believe, from what I have seen this morning, I don't think his ratings were as good as the debate. In fact, I do have something here that they, as of right now, I think the debate drew about 12 to 13 million viewers. And so I think that Donald Trump is a winner right there. I think any time that you are going to, whether you are donating money or donating time or whatever it is to our veterans, that's a win-win situation. I saw a couple of things online this week as soon as this all started to unfold about how Donald Trump was not going to participate in this debate and instead was going to hold this event for the veterans, that I saw a couple of things online that people said, well, you know, he's never before in his life donated any money or anything like that to veterans. That's kind of hard to gauge. I mean, on the surface, maybe you can look at all of the things that he donates to and say, okay, yeah, maybe it doesn't appear that he has donated any money to any veterans organizations. But when you have so many different charities that you donate to, and you have so many different ways in which to funnel that money to all these different charities, a lot of times what you see on the surface maybe really is not what is. But so, of course, as Megyn Kelly would say last night, the elephant not in the room, of course, was Donald Trump. And several things about that. I think that without Donald Trump there, my first impression was that it gave everyone else on the stage a chance to really talk about issues. And because and even with Donald Trump not there, I mean, we saw right out of the box, Megyn Kelly couldn't help herself, and she had to ask about Donald Trump first thing. And so when people want to talk about whether or not Donald Trump controls the media, you're damn right he controls the media. He controls Fox News, apparently, because that was the first question that was asked in the media. And so while I think that without Donald Trump there, I thought it gave everyone else, definitely gave everybody else a little bit more time to speak, I think. I think that Donald Trump obviously is one of those people that when he walks into a room, he kind of dominates it. And a lot of times that's just people's, you know, that's their personality. But so I did think that it gave people, the other people on the stage, more time to speak. And it also gave them time to really concentrate and focus more on the issues. But apparently to a lot of people, that, like I said, the the report I have here from Newsmax is that this was the second least watched debate since this whole process started. And so I think there is I think there's a Trump factor going on there, that a lot of people do tune into these debates. And you know, those of us who are political geeks, you want people to tune in to learn about the issues and learn about the candidates and make an informed, educated decision. But we all know that a lot of people tuned into these debates just to see what Donald Trump would do. And I think that it's pretty obvious, at least to me, that Donald Trump pretty much, if he lives, rent-free in Megyn Kelly's head, that's for sure, because otherwise it wouldn't have been the first question out of her mouth. And I think he's probably living rent-free in the minds of the Fox News powers that be. Because again, even with him not there, he was there. He was mentioned. People kept bringing up his name. And in fact, that first question, I couldn't get the soundbite for this, and it was really, really bumming me out. But again, the first question right out of the box from Megyn Kelly was to Senator Ted Cruz, and basically what she asked him and said, I believe her exact words were, let's talk about the elephant not in the room, about Donald Trump not being here. And the first portion of Senator Cruz's response to that question was great. He thanked the people of Iowa. He thanked them for their hospitality. He thanked them for welcoming his family into their homes. And that was great. That part of it was classy. But then something happened, and I think it was very un-Ted Cruz-like. And what he basically did was say, okay, paraphrase what he said, but with that being, after he thanked the people of Iowa, he basically went on to say, with that being said, I'll just say this one thing. I'm a maniac. Everybody on the stage here is fat, stupid, and ugly. And Ben Carson, you're a terrible surgeon. Now that we've gotten the Donald Trump portion of the debate out of the way, and it got a big laugh and a chuckle from the moderators, and a laugh and a chuckle from the audience. And when I saw that, I watched the debate later on last night. I was gone most of the evening, so I wasn't at home watching it. So I saw this clip before I saw any comments online. And my first response to that clip was, that's disgusting. It's classless. It's tasteless. It's unpresidential. It's very un-Ted Cruz-like. And I didn't find it funny at all. And granted, when Donald Trump makes sophomoric attacks like that on people, he's doing it for just that reason. He's attacking because he thinks that's a valid attack on somebody. You know, whether it is or it isn't, whether it's something that fifth graders would do, you know, is another argument. But when you are, when the person in question, it's really kind of basic. When the person in question isn't even on the stage to defend themselves, my response to it, and I posted something online about it, was not cool. It's just not cool. And so I thought it was a bad move on the part of Ted Cruz. But I've got another thing here. You know, so that one of the big questions this week was would boycotting the debate help or hurt Donald Trump? And this is by Nick Sanchez. It's a report from Newsmax, and it's really, he brings up 8 very good points. You know, he talked about raising money for the veterans, which I think, you know, you can say whatever you want to say about that. And but anytime you're going to raise money for veterans, I think is a win-win situation. And $6 million is nothing to sneeze at. But I'm going to go on with this later on. Speaking of veterans, I have with me right now, like I said, former congressional candidate here in the 1st Congressional District in Missouri. He is a political consultant. He is a former Navy SEAL. So, again, thank you, Martin, for your service to our nation. Martin Baker is joining us today to talk all things Iowa. Martin, how you doing? Thanks for calling in.
I'm good, Becker.
thanks so much for calling in. So did you get to see any of the debate last night?
I saw parts and pieces of it. I really don't try to take much stock in the dog and pony show that are debates before primaries and things like that. Typically, most of them, all they are is just they many of them devolve to me into a childish spat over who gets the first chair and who it's amusing at times. They are necessary. I will admit that. But nothing really substantive comes out of most of them. You don't really get to hear about the core platform issues that the voters want to know about, something that they can really feel. Nothing really tangible, in the most part, comes out of them.
Right. Like I said, my first impression was there was a lot of gotcha going on, and there's been a lot of back and forth about, you know, people at Fox News and Megyn Kelly and stuff this week. And I thought that my first impression was that a lot of the back and forth, a lot of the gotcha was aimed at Ted Cruz. But, you know, that being said, what I'd really like to know is what, you know, the Iowa caucus happens on Monday, and this is the first in the nation, and it's the first chance that people are going to really cast a real vote for who they want to be the next president of the United States. So what kind of is your overall view of what may or may not happen in Iowa?
I want to make a very, very bold statement. I honestly think that Trump is in trouble in Iowa. Donald Trump is in trouble in Iowa. The numbers all point to, and what it points to is that we're going to see what his ground game is. If he truly has the supporters on the ground that he claims and he purports, he can give all these grandiose chats about how this happens or that happens, but we're going to soon find out who has the better ground game, because that is what it all boils down to in Iowa. As most people know, a caucus basically boils down to if you bring the most people to the event and those people basically essentially shout the loudest, you win. If you don't, you don't.
Right. And you know, I think the whole caucus process, too, is kind of confusing for a lot of people, too. And maybe they may not really, you know what exactly goes on. But yeah, it's basically, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's basically, it's just, you know, everybody kind of breaks off into groups. And like you said, whoever shouts the loudest about their guy wins. And
that is correct. The point and the bottom line of it is, and we saw this, and I bring this to my own sadness, we can use example in our own recent caucus history. We can bring up the caucus. We can bring up the St. Charles County caucus back in 2012. Those debacles turned into almost a fist fight over, I want my guy. No, I want my guy. And this is not really – the political process is not about who shouts the loudest. It is you walk into the ballot box, you pull the lever for your candidate. The guy who went the guy or woman who wins the most votes, there's your winner. Not the person who brought a busload of people in at last minute and said, oh, suddenly we're this, we're that. I saw that in, like I said, going back to 2012 in the St. Louis City caucus, I saw people who I had never seen at any Republican, conservative, whatever phrase you want to throw into event, and suddenly for one day, they're Republicans and they're voting in our caucus.
Right.
I personally was offended by it.
Right. And you know what? Those could be a lot of those could be the same people now who are saying, "Well, how long has Donald Trump been a Republican? What? He's only been a Republican for 6 or 8 months." But yet, that a lot of those people who show up to the caucus have never done anything political, and then, like you said, for one day they're a Republican and they show up. But, you know, what do you think? Like you said, that – I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Beck.
When you were talking about that possibly Trump being in trouble in Iowa, what do you think about him skipping the debate? Does it help him or hurt him, or does it not make a difference? Or
I don't think it makes a difference. At this point right now, I believe that most of the candidates in Iowa know where they stand. Or have a good impression of where they stand. And what they're trying to do is, and they're just trying to get their ground people to say, how many people can you get to, using an example, how many people can you get to Iowa City, to their caucus? How many people can you get to Cedar Rapids? Or how many people can you get to Council Bluffs, to the Pottawatomie County caucuses? Because this is what it's going to boil down to. It is all going to boil down to the number of counties, the number of people that you can pack into whatever caucus hall that you have at that moment.
Right.
And get them in there shouting, chanting, stomping, throwing things for whatever the case may be for their candidate, whether it's Carly Fiorina, whether it's Santorum, or whomever else the case may be, just throwing those names out there. Anyone
right.
can win this.
Right. Right. Speaking of those, though, the people that maybe who were on the undercard debate, do you see anybody maybe getting a bump in the polls next week? Will Carly Fiorina, Huckabee, Santorum, any one of those people you think maybe get a bump?
Sadly to say, no. Sadly to say, unless the only way that undercard candidates are going to get a bump is if they are in the top 3 to 5. If they're in the top 3 to 5, they will get a bump because suddenly it'll show some people, wait a second, maybe I should look into this person or that person. Otherwise, they're going to still
right.
be treading water, and most candidates will still be treading water until at least Super Tuesday when the herd will hopefully be thinned by then.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And we're still
a
ways away from Super Tuesday.
Right, right, right. Do you think anybody drops out after Iowa, or will they wait until maybe after New Hampshire or South Carolina? Or
I think we will start seeing the first drop-offs after South Carolina, after New Hampshire. Some of those will start when people will start to face that stark reality that, you know what, maybe this isn't my time right now. Or maybe I've run out of money. Because if people look at political candidates, and I know this from personal experience, people look at political candidates as a investment. And if they're not seeing any return on their investment, they're going to start funding. They're going to stop funding said investment. And that's what it
right.
all boils down to. Some of them are starting to look at some of these candidates as they're rating them as risky, and then soon enough they're going to be rated as a junk bond, and you stop funding junk bonds.
Right, right, right. Well, you know, I mean, do you even have a little bit of, going past Monday, Iowa, do you maybe have a few thoughts on maybe what might happen in New Hampshire? Or do we have to – you think maybe we have to kind of wait and see what happens in Iowa to – maybe get a little better, clearer picture of New Hampshire.
I honestly think
I know that.
Go ahead, Beck.
Oh, I was going to say, I know that Donald Trump is up big in New Hampshire, and New Hampshire's kind of a crazy state because I've heard John Kasich is in second place. I've even heard Jeb Bush taking second place. So New Hampshire's kind of a crazy place.
If you ran a poll, Becky, I could show you where you're in second place in New Hampshire. Polls are just that. You call
That's
the
true.
Right amount of
That's
people,
true.
Anybody could be in second place in New Hampshire. It all boils down to the bottom line of it is yes, Trump's ahead because he spent a lot of money in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. He spent a lot of ads in New Hampshire. He has the name recognition in New Hampshire. So a lot of the people that you're looking at that are they put a ground game in. Because you and I know this well as better than anybody. Is that elections are won and lost by your ground game, by the number of people that you can put in the doors, in the churches, in the community centers, getting out the message of your candidate. I don't care how you can spend all the money you want on all the billboards. You can spend all the money you want on the newspaper ads. If nobody's looking at the billboards, if nobody's reading the newspaper, if nobody's looking at your TV ads, you won't win. Because if they can't find some way to resonate your message with them and how it affects them, how is Donald Trump as president going to affect my small business? How is Donald Trump as president going to affect my child who's in the military? Whatever your situation may be, if it does not directly connect with them, they're not going to vote for them, whomever the candidate is, whether it's Trump,
That's
Cruz,
true.
Whomever the case may be. It just won't happen.
That's true. And I think that's what a lot of people are saying about Hillary Clinton on the other side, is that she just doesn't connect with people, that she seems very remote and just very, you know, she's not connecting. Bill Clinton may be a lot of things, but the one thing that he could do was connect with people and at least make it look like that he was relating to them. And
oh yeah, he connected with a lot of people.
In more ways than one. Yeah. Speaking of the Democrats, and I hadn't got a chance to talk about this, but I was gonna. Michael Bloomberg is making noise about maybe jumping in. What do you think about that? Will it make a
Bloomberg
difference at all?
Bloomberg is another Trump clone. Essentially, mm-hmm. I have a crap ton of cash, and I can spread out all mm-hmm. over the country, and it makes no negligible dent in my personal income. So what
right.
Michael Bloomberg wants to do, Michael Bloomberg, for heaven only knows whatever reason, is just screaming for relevance again. And this is what it all boils down to. Bloomberg did an abysmal job as the mayor of New York. Bloomberg has not really acquitted himself. He called himself a fiscal conservative. He called himself this, that, and whatever. And his true tendencies came out, and he knows that he can find no safe harbor within the Republican ranks. Mm-hmm. He mm-hmm. knows that the Democrats will always look at him funny because of the fact that he ran as a Republican for the mayor of one of the most liberal cities in the country.
Right, right.
So what he's going to try to do is he's going to say, well, you know what, I'm not either one of them. And that's the problem. And some people, I will say this, some people will gravitate to that because they're tired of both parties, not just the Republican Party.
Right.
They're tired of both parties. You've got disenchanted Republicans. You've got disenchanted Democrats. And they're looking. They don't want to go to the Green Party because it's too extreme on environmental. They don't want to go to the Libertarian
right.
Party because they don't feel like that it does enough on foreign policy issues. They don't want to mm-hmm. go to one of those lesser parties because they don't feel like that they have a chance of victory.
Right.
And
right,
this is what
exactly.
it all boils down to. People look at the strength of a political party by its win-loss total. If you're not winning, you're a lousy party. If you are winning, you might have a little bit something going on about yourself. That's how people look at it.
Right, right. That's true. Well, I guess anything can happen in Iowa. And, somebody's going to win, somebody's going to lose. And I guess we'll just have to wait and see until Monday and see what goes on. Thank you so much, Martin, for calling in and giving us your perspective and telling us what you think might happen from personal experience, because nothing beats that. But
thanks for having me on, Beck.
Oh, thank you so much, and I'm sure that we will be talking to you again.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you. Thanks again, Martin. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That was, of course, a former congressional candidate in CD1 here in Missouri, Martin Baker. He does some political consulting right now, and former Navy SEAL. And, of course, we thank him for his service to our nation. I'm going to take a break. We're going to come back and going to wrap up some of the debate talk here, and then I got some other stuff to get into. But I got a whole bunch of other stuff to get into, so don't go away. Stay right where you are. I'll be right back. We're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, everybody, for chilling with me on this Friday. TGIF, people, the weekend to have some great weather here in St. Louis. Hope it's going to be nice and sunny and kind of warm wherever you're at. But we are talking, of course, about last night's GOP debate. And, of course, we just heard from Martin Baker, who is a former congressional candidate here in Congressional District 1 in Missouri, and sometime political consultant right now. And I guess you can say he is our new political analyst here at Conservative Cauldron Radio, giving us his take on what may happen Monday in Iowa. That is when, of course, Americans will cast their first votes for president of the United States in this election cycle. And so all eyes are on Iowa right now. But very quickly before I move on to something else, I was talking earlier before the break about the comment that was made about Donald Trump by Ted Cruz last night. And I thought it was, well, I mean, I don't want to go back into it, but I thought it was kind of uncalled for. Donald Trump wasn't there to defend himself, and I would have said that about anyone on the stage if you are going to make comments about someone who's not there. And but by the same token, I thought that New Jersey Governor Chris Christie had one of the best lines of the night. This came up during a brief time when Hillary Clinton's emails were brought up, and here's what Chris Christie had to say about that.
Okay. Well, let me tell you something. I do believe that the vote on NSA made the country less safe. But let me tell you what the country should really be worried about. I watched that town hall meeting with the Democrats the other night, and I heard Hillary Clinton ask a direct question by an Iowan, and that's what Iowans like to do. They like to ask direct questions. And they asked about her email situation. And here's what she said to the American people. She did it for convenience. For her convenience. She put America's secrets at risk for her convenience. She put American intelligence officers at risk for her convenience. She put American strategy at risk for her convenience. Let me tell you who's not qualified to be president of the United States, Chris. Hillary Rodham Clinton did that to our country. She is not qualified to be president of the United States. The fact is, what we need is someone on that stage who has been tested, who has been through it, who has made decisions, who is sitting in a chair of consequence, and who can prosecute the case against Hillary Clinton on that stage. That is exactly what I am ready to do. Governor.
Governor Christie is exactly right. That's exactly what happened. Hillary Clinton put American lives and American intelligence all in harm's way, all at risk for her convenience. That's exactly what she did. That's it in a nutshell. And again, Governor Christie is absolutely spot on when he says that because of this, Hillary Clinton is, well, that's one of many reasons, Hillary Clinton is in no way qualified to be the president of the United States. And I thought it was, Ted said, I thought it was one of the lines of the night. And Chris Christie also, in his closing remarks, too, brought up another thing that he's talked about previously in other debates, and that was the fact national security and the NSA and things of that nature, I think, kind of hit home with him as a New Jerseyan and someone who was right there on the morning of 9/11. And the story that he has related, again, during another debate, was that on that morning, Chris Christie's wife, I believe her name's Mary Pat, and I believe she is a lawyer too, you can correct me if I'm wrong, was in a building two blocks away from the World Trade Center that morning, and he did not hear from her for 6 hours after the 9/11 attacks. And what he talks about during that 6 hours when he could not reach her and he could not talk to her, that he realized that he had to consider the possibility that he may be at that point, maybe a single parent of three small children at that time. I believe he said ages 8, 5, and 1. That's a big deal, and it's something that does not leave you right away. Fortunately, that did not happen, and he eventually did get a hold of her and speak to her and know that she was okay. But just to have that feeling for just a few hours is not something that's ever going to leave you. And I think, you know, there might be a lot of issues that Chris Christie may be not completely correct on, but I think national security would be one thing that he absolutely is correct on, and it would be for that very reason. But again, moving along here from debate news, I do have some latest latest poll numbers here. This is from, of course, Real Clear Politics, and this is from this morning. I printed this out this morning. This is the latest numbers that I have. That this is nationally, that Donald Trump is still up 35.3, Ted Cruz 19.7, Marco Rubio 10.7, Ben Carson 8.3, Jeb Bush 4.8. In Iowa, 3 days out from Iowa, Donald Trump 31.8, 24.8, tightens up a little bit in Iowa, and that's what makes it interesting. Marco Rubio at 14, Ben Carson at 8, and Rand Paul at 4. So, again, it's really going to be interesting to see how Iowa plays out, because I think in the next 3 days even, these numbers are just going to jump around so much. New Hampshire, which will be 8 days from Monday on Tuesday, February the 9th, Donald Trump, 31.7. Ted Cruz, 12.6. Ohio Governor John Kasich, 12.1. Marco Rubio, 10.6. And Jeb Bush, 9.7. So, again, these two states really have a unique voting base, especially New Hampshire. You would think New Hampshire, being a New England state, the East Coast state, that the place would be full of liberals. And yeah, there are. But there's also a lot of independent voters in New Hampshire as well. But so, again, the next 3 days, even past Monday, is really going to be fascinating to watch. On the other side, nationally, this is national numbers, Hillary Clinton is at 52.1%, Bernie Sanders 37.3%, and Martin O'Malley 2.1%. In Iowa, Hillary Clinton 46.7%, Bernie Sanders 44.6%, I'm sorry, Martin O'Malley 4.4. So it's really close there in Iowa. I would think that for a lot of polls that is within the margin of error. And New Hampshire is Bernie Sanders to lose, I think, at this point. My numbers here, Bernie Sanders 53.7, Hillary Clinton 39.4, and Martin O'Malley 2.9. So again, the next week and a half or so, well, especially with Iowa, we got to get past Iowa before we can go to New Hampshire. I think even in the next 3 days, these numbers are just going to jump around so much. And it's for political geeks, it's Christmas and our birthday all rolled into one, and it's really going to be fascinating to watch. But one of the things that happened this week, and I touched on it briefly with Martin, was that former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg is making some noise about possibly jumping into this race. And this is from, the report I have is from Reuters, and it says here, of course, that he has asked his aides to draw up plans for an independent campaign. He would be running as an independent. Well, like Martin said, that I think that everybody knows that, especially with his views on gun control and trying to tell people how big of a soda they can drink, Michael Bloomberg is a closet liberal. I don't know why in a state like New York, in a city like New York, he doesn't just come out of the liberal closet and say, here I am. But he doesn't. And as Martin said as well, that Democrats kind of look at him funny for running as a Republican in one of the most liberal cities in America. But it says here, according to Reuters, that he this was from last Sunday, that had told his aides to draw up plans for an independent campaign for the presidency. And it also says here that he has advised friends and associates that he would be willing to spend at least $1 billion of his own money on a campaign for the November 2016 election. And it goes on here to say that this was first reported last Saturday by the New York Times. Michael Bloomberg is 73, and he has given himself an early March deadline for making a final decision on whether or not he's going to enter this race. And This same source also said that after commissioning a poll in December to see how he would fare against Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, that he did commission this poll in early December. Of course, no third-party candidate has ever won a presidential election. But, and again, like Martin said, a lot of people are going to view Michael Bloomberg as a Donald Trump clone. He's a guy with a boatload of money, and he's willing to throw it around to run for president. While Michael Bloomberg has a lot of very close Wall Street ties, again, he has some very liberal social views, and of course, I think Everett, we're all familiar with his views on gun control. But this is not the first time, of course, he's flirted with this idea. He's talked about it before. He was the mayor from 2002 to 2013, and he switched his party affiliation from Republican to Independent in 2007. And it says here that one unnamed Bloomberg advisor told the New York Times the former mayor believes voters want, quote, a non-ideological bipartisan results-oriented vision that has not been offered in the 2016 election party cycle by either party. Well, that may be, but he's not that guy. He is not that guy. And this report here goes on to say that Bloomberg earned 13% support when facing a hypothetical three-way race against Clinton and Trump. According to a poll of 4,060 registered voters, this was conducted January 14th through the 17th by Morning Consult. Trump and Clinton were virtually tied at 37 and 36%. Part of Bloomberg's motivation to enter the race, it says, stems from a frustration with Clinton's campaign. Hillary Clinton, of course, has been dogged by questions about her honesty amid her ongoing investigation into use of a private email server as Secretary of State. So, you know, whether or not this would make any kind of difference in what's going on the Democrat side, I don't think so. Again, Michael Bloomberg is another guy with a lot of money, and again, no independent candidate, like it said in that report from Reuters, no third-party candidate has ever won. Most people don't, for whatever reason, don't look at third-party candidates, whether it's independents, whether it's libertarians, whether it's Green Party. You know, most people's focus is on Republican or Democrat. And, you know, we will see what happens, whether or not Michael Bloomberg will jump into this race or not. It's kind of late. But, you know, I think probably the conventional wisdom in all of this is that it would split the vote for Democrats. Way more than it would Republicans, because I think most Republicans know that Michael Bloomberg is not a Republican. The other question to consider, what if Hillary Clinton is indicted? I think the jury's kind of split right now. No pun intended. I think opinions are split right now on whether or not she will be. If she is indicted, does Joe Biden take her place at the top of the Democrat ticket? So, that, you know, there's a lot of questions here, and you know, some of them may be answered if and when Michael Bloomberg jumps in and if and when Hillary Clinton gets indicted. So that is what it is. And apparently Mr. Bloomberg will be making some sort of a decision by the end of March. So we will see what happens there. I'm going to take another quick break. We will be right back with a few more odds and ends before we call it a day. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. Stay right where you are.
Lay down your burden.
Listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you for hanging out with me, TGIF. We've been talking a lot about a lot of things today. We, of course, discussed last night's GOP debate and some things that went on there. And former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg possibly jumping in the race on the Democrat side and what that may mean. A couple of other things here before we wrap up. This week, a University of Missouri professor was charged with assault. If anybody remembers last fall, there was some racial tension, some racial unrest on the campus of University of Missouri here in Columbia, Missouri. And basically what went on was that there was a protest that they didn't feel like the minority students did not feel that that the heads of the university were addressing some racial incidents that had gone on campus, that they had not addressed some racial disparities, things of that nature. And how this finally culminated was that some of the football players said that unless the head of the campus resigned, and that was the University of Missouri system president, Tim Wolf, unless that he resigned, that they were not going to take the field and play football. And but there was some protests, and there was kind of an Occupy Wall Street type feel to this. People were kind of camped out, and but there was a professor there by the name of Melissa Click, and she was caught on camera by a student journalist, which, ironically enough, the University of Missouri has one of the best journalism schools in the nation. So she was caught on camera by a student journalist, and she was basically trying to get him. They were kind of in a public quad area there protesting, and she was basically trying to force him out, to get him to leave. And she was caught on camera asking for some, quote, some muscle to get him removed from this area. And the university, this is a report from Fox News, the University of Missouri communications professor caught on video scuffling with a journalist during a November campus demonstration was charged with third degree assault Monday morning, the Columbia City Prosecutor's Office confirmed to FoxNews.com. A summons with a yet-to-be-determined court date is set to be mailed to UM Assistant Professor of Communications, Melissa Click. If she's found guilty, her penalty would ultimately be up to a judge, but would likely require paying a fine, a spokesperson from the prosecutor's office said. The video, which was quickly posted to YouTube, showed Click confronting videographer Mark Schierbecker during a campus protest on November 9th and apparently trying to block him from shooting video on a public quad. At one point, Schierbecker asks to speak with Click, who promptly tells him to leave. Quote, "No, you need to get out," she says, pointing away and then seeming to grab Schierbecker's camera. "You need to get out, you need to get out." When Schierbecker refuses to leave, Click yells to a group of nearby demonstrators, "Who wants to help me get this reporter out of here? I need some muscle over here." The campus protests began over perceived racial issues at the University of Missouri. System President Tim Wolf resigned during the demonstrations. Click has since issued an apology and resigned as a courtesy appointment at the Missouri School of Journalism. That appointment allowed her to serve on graduate panels for students from other academic units, the Columbia Missourian reported. But she retained her primary position at the school through the UM Board of Curators, though the UM Board of Curators called for her firing just last week. While the University of Missouri seems to have no accountability, the judicial system in Missouri does, Columbia State Representative Caleb Jones told ABC 17 in Columbia. So, Melissa Click has been charged with assault, third-degree assault. And, you know, when you have a set, again, Mizzou is one of the, if not the, touted as one of the best journalism schools in the nation. And here you have one of their professors trying to curb someone's freedom of speech and freedom of the press. And pretty amazing. Ironic maybe is just one word for that, but amazing is the first word I think that comes to my mind. And so we will see, of course, what happens with that and see if anything more comes of that assault charge. And something very quickly, I may save this for next week, but I don't know if anybody has heard about the Walt Disney employees who were fired by Walt Disney. But before they were, they were fired, but then they were also kind of said, oh, before you leave, could you train your foreign counterpart, the people who are going to come in and replace you, who are foreign workers. And there has been a lawsuit filed by these employees. But I wish I had time to get into that today, but I will have to save that for another day. So there's the teaser. It has a lot to do with the HB1 visa system, which Texas Senator and presidential candidate Ted Cruz has been challenged on. But very quickly, without further ado, the no smoking campaign took several steps backward with the report that a Nepalese woman who has been smoking 30 cigarettes a day even attributes her long life to chain smoking. What's ironic is that Batuli Lamakane has proof of her claim because she is 112 years old and has been smoking daily for the past, wait for it, 95 years. But besides smoking, which medical experts would disagree with, Lamakane explains her longevity to a stress-free life. She points out, people of this modern age have too much stress, and those who do not work or are idle in their old age won't live long. So you have to be active and stress-free, quotes Metro. Other than her vice, the very old Nepalese who turns 113 in March makes medical sense in her other advice. Doctors would agree that her stress and lack of physical activity are bad for the body. Her having a habit appears to have a minimal, if zero, effect on her well-being. Perhaps people who could not give up smoking could take a tip from an old woman on how to hold a cigarette. Rather than place the cigarette between her index finger and middle finger, Lamakane uses her entire right fist and then brings the fist to her mouth to inhale, reports the New York Post. She began smoking in 1920 at the age of 17. She insists, "I've been smoking for over 95 years. There is nothing wrong with smoking." However, she does not smoke Philip Morris or Marlboro. Rather, she makes her own nicotine fix by using beedies, which is tobacco wrapped in a tendu leaf. The great-grandmom has outlived most of the people she grew up with in her village, including some of those she gave birth to. Four of her children have died, and only one, a son aged 85, is still alive. Her husband left Lamakain 80 years ago to look for a job in India. Despite the roof of her house destroyed by the recent Nepal earthquake, Lamakain refuses to live with a relative. She instead provides for her daily needs from donations given by a local Hindu temple. Finally, the wise old woman has an advice that many people, whether young or old, smoker or non-smoker, should heed. That is, be happy, then you will live a long life. I'll just add one thing to that. Smoke them if you got them. With that, I am calling it a day. I am out of here. Thank you, everyone, for hanging out with me today. Please go to theblacksphere.net, Kevin Jackson, myself, and lots of other talented. Have lots of things there for your consideration and perusal. You can find me at theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com, facebook.com/BeckyNoble, and on Twitter at Patriot Witch. Again, everybody, thank you so much for joining me today, and I will see you next time. Have a great weekend.